basic point I'm trying to understand are these two aspects of contemporary India, which probably all of you have seen in some form in either following the business press or the political press. So these two aspects are, one aspect is this talk about growth. So India and China and Brazil are one of the economies in the periphery of the world capitalist system which has been growing, and there is a lot of news about that. That is one aspect of the contemporary scene. The other aspect, which is not reported a lot in the international media, is the growing people's movement in India. One important constituent of this broad range of people's movement is the Maoist movement. So basically what I'm trying to understand is how, from a political economic perspective, I can understand these two facets, the rise in growth and the rise in the people's movement. And there is a wide spectrum of movements ranging from people who use the legal framework that is available and use nonviolent methods to Maoist movement, which is openly against the Indian state and which is organizing an armed struggle. So I would like to try to understand how these two are related. Now, the outline of my talk will be, I will start with giving you a structural background, as background, a structural evolution of the Indian economy. And that will bring me to the current phase of the growth, and I will emphasize three aspects of the growth process that is currently underway in India. So it is undoubtedly true that India is growing if you measure the growth as the growth in the GDP. But the three important characteristics of this growth is that, first, it is increasing inequality. So across all dimensions that we can think of, this growth is increasing or leading to increasing inequality. The most important aspect of this increasing inequality, I think, is the divergence between the agricultural sector, which continues to employ the largest section of the Indian workforce, and the other sectors. And the other aspect is that people who are managing to go out of the agricultural sector are getting absorbed into what is this huge pool of workers, which we will call the informal sector. So that is something which will be dealt in greater detail by Snehashi, but I would broadly like to say that those are the two options available to the majority of the workforce. And the informal sector is a place where there is low wages, there is no social security, there is no workplace security, workers are not organized. So if the majority of the working population is either in agriculture or in the informal sector, then it necessarily means that that this growth process is bypassing them. That means that there is continued poverty. So I will show you some data about both income and non-income measures of poverty and how, despite this talk of growth, there is no decline in any meaningful sense if we think about poverty. These two aspects are now complemented by this current neoliberal framework where there is a huge attack on the basic resources of the people, often which are outside the ambit of the market, so common property resources. These three aspects of the current growth process leads to exclusion, dispossession, and displacement. And that is the context in which people's movements are arising. And as I said earlier, there is a wide spectrum of these movements ranging from Gandhian to the Maoist. So that is how I link this growth to the current phase of this movement, people's movement in India. So I would like to basically illustrate these three aspects using some data. So first, let me begin by showing you that a very important aspect of the current growth process is that it is not built on any structural transformation of the economy. And that is why this growth process is very fragile. By that, what I mean is, so these two graphs are showing the sectoral shares in employment and the sectoral shares in the value added in the Indian economy. And there is a very stark difference. The sectoral share in terms of value added, so the blue line is agriculture. Around the time India became independent from British colonialism, it was close to 60%, and it has secularly declined. So if so, this stops at 2001. If I proceed to 2010, it has come to about 16 or 17%. So 16 or 17% of the total value added comes from agriculture, and that continues to employ about 55% of the workforce. So there is no structural transformation in the economy in the sense that a large section of the workforce has not shifted out of agriculture, but the share of GDP that is coming from that sector is declining. So that necessarily means that the huge proportion of the workforce is working in a sector which is adding less and less value added, and therefore it's low productivity and low wage job. So that is the background. Now let me come to the current phase. So the current phase, of course, is this phase, and here to see whether there is this the talk of growth in real GDP is correct or not, I just plot the growth in per capita real GDP for all the plan period after independence, and there is an unmistakable trend in the growth rate of GDP. So growth rate of GDP is high and it has been increasing, so that cannot be denied. But what is the implication of this for the majority of the people in the economy is what concerns us. And one of the ways in which growth in GDP can lead to improvement in the lives of the working people is that if it generates stable employment, well-paying jobs, basic social security. So what we would like to juxtapose to this story of growth, which the international financial press talks a lot about, is to look at the other aspect, which is how the lives of the people who are making this GDP is evolving over this period. So first, let me give you a sectoral decomposition of the growth rates, and this will really tell us large part of the story that I want to say. So this is the agriculture. So this is the annual percentage growth rate, a five-year moving average, from about 1955, it goes up to 2010. So this is the agricultural sector, which you can see very strikingly, the rates of growth have been close to 2.5 or 3% for this whole period where we have been having this huge growth. And this sector is the sector that employs, even in 2010, 55% of the workforce. So 55% of the workforce is engaged in a sector whose growth rate is barely above the population growth rate. So in per capita terms, their real incomes or the real value added is not even above zero. So the growth is really going on in sectors like manufacturing, trade, and especially the finance, insurance, and real estate sector. So those sectors have been growing, but those sectors are not absorbing the extra labor which is employed in the agricultural sector. So that is one of the important aspects of the current regime of growth in India. Now, one way to look at where the people, the working people are going, if they do not have employment outside agriculture, is to see whether they are getting absorbed in the formal sector or not. So that is a striking figure of the growth of employment in the formal sector is the following. So the first three bars represent the growth of employment in the period 1983 to 1994. So that was the period when this current neoliberal regime was just being put in place. So there are a couple of things to notice here. So the blue one is the public sector growth, the red one is the private sector, and the green one is the total organized sector employment. Even in this period, which is considered much better than the current period, the total formal sector job growth was only about 1.2% per annum, much lower than the population growth rate, which during this period was close to 2%. Now, look what happened in the later period. So there is a collapse in the total organized sector job growth to close to zero. So during this period, 94 to 2008, when the economy is really growing very fast, organized sector employment growth is completely nil. So what does that imply? That implies that the workforce which is coming, the population that is coming into the workforce is being pushed into the informal sector. So informal sector is the sector where most of the workforce is being pushed in. So to understand the current growth regime, we need to look at what the informal sector has to offer to the working class. So there is a very important study done by the Arjun Sengupta Committee in 2004. In 2007, they came out with a report, and they used national sample survey data for the period 2004-05, and they came up with a classification which shows that close to 94% of the Indian workforce works in the informal sector in 2004-05. There are several characteristics of this informal sector. It is marked by low wages, work conditions are very hazardous, there is no job security, so you can lose your job within a week, or you can continue working in your job. It is totally at the discretion of the employer. There is no social security, there is no pensions. So this is the condition of the majority of the workforce. The informal sector is not only is spread across all the three major sectors of the Indian economy. So if we look at the share of the employment that is coming from the informal sector, agriculture, of course, has most of the people employed in the informal sector, because that is understood, it is mainly petty production, so there is no large-scale capitalist organization of agriculture. But even in industry and services, more than 70% of the employment is of an informal nature. So this really shows that the growth process that is currently underway in India is bypassing most of the working people. So they are either being forced to work in agriculture, which is adding less and less value added, and therefore they are engaged in low productivity, low wage work, or if they manage to get out of agriculture, what they are going to, where they are going is the informal sector, because formal sector job growth is completely nil. So that is the context in which we should understand the current movements, the people's movement that's going on. Now, let me briefly talk about the condition of the agricultural sector from the perspective of landlessness. Now, the Indian data system collects data on landlessness, and according to official statistics, landlessness is about 10%. But I think that is that is not the correct way to measure landlessness. So what we do is we go into NSS data and we look at people who have any land apart from their homestead. So people who have any land apart from homestead, we consider to be landed. So if we use that kind of a definition, currently about 60% of households are landless. It is not 10%. And importantly, it has been a rising trend. So when the Indian government talks about landlessness, they talk about people who have zero land. What we are looking at is people who have land which can be used as a productive facility. So if you remove the homestead, so if you count the homestead also as belong, making you landed, then it will be 10%, and then it doesn't change. So all over the years, about 10% of the households have no land. That is true, but that is not landlessness. Landlessness is if you do not have land which can be used for cultivation, then it is close to 60% and it has been increasing.
This is within agriculture, right?
This is within agriculture, yes. So that is agriculture, and in agriculture there is increasing landlessness and as we saw, value added is going down, so there is low productivity work. What is available outside agriculture is informal sector jobs. So what I think is important is to understand how the two interact with each other to reinforce a dynamics of what I call stagnation and exclusion. So the basic idea is that in agriculture, majority of the holdings are smallholders. So about 80% of the holdings in agriculture is less than 2.5 acres. that amount of land is not enough to generate enough income to support a family of four at even very basic subsistence level. Therefore, people who have these small plots of land, which is 80% of the population in agriculture, have to necessarily find employment outside agriculture. What is offered on outside agriculture, as we have seen, is informal sector jobs. Informal sector jobs have a casual or attached labor nature, so there is no stable jobs available. There is insufficient income because there is low wages, and it is mainly of a petty production nature. So either they do informal production on their own, or they are attached to firms which have very small scale. So therefore, there is a link between the agricultural sector and the informal sector in the sense that the smallholders who have to find alternate employment outside agriculture are not willing to give up that small plot of land because it is a way in which they can meet part of their subsistence need outside the market. Because the income that they get in the informal sector is low, and there is high uncertainty whether that income will be there, they want to hedge against the uncertainty by clinging onto that small plot of land. So if they cling onto that small plot of land, they will not leave that land, and therefore in agriculture there will not be consolidation of land, so technological change will be arrested in agriculture, therefore productivity will be low, therefore wages will be low, they will be forced to the informal sector, and there is a vicious circle of poverty. So this, I think, is one of the important characteristics of the current growth regime. And the kind of policies that the Indian government is promoting in no way attacks this main problem. So the result of this is that most of the people should be considered poor if we take a meaningful poverty line into account. So let me show you some data about income and non-income poverties, and then I will talk about inequality. So this is the way in which poverty is measured in India. So what I would like to focus on is this green line. Now the point is that the poverty line that is used to calculate the percentage of the population below poverty, or the number of population below poverty, uses a poverty line which is very small, very low. So let me just give you an idea. So in 2004-05, the official poverty line for rural areas was only about 357 rupees per month per person. So this is a per month figure, 357 rupees. Now this includes expenditures on food and non-food. Non-food includes healthcare, education, transportation, all of them is included in a basket which can be bought for only 357 rupees. So anybody who had less than that is considered poor. Anybody who had above than that is not considered poor. In urban areas, it was a little higher. It was 539 rupees. So if you divide it by, say, 50, so if you divide, so the exchange rate in 2004-05 was about, say, 40 rupees to a dollar. So if we take, say, 35 rupees to a dollar, it will come out to about 10. So $10 a month per person is supposed to be the poverty line. So if we use this abysmally low poverty line, then the proportion of people under who can be considered poor has fallen. So that is the blue line. But the Arjun Sengupta committee that I mentioned earlier, the person who was involved in making that report pointed out that if we really want to consider people who are economically vulnerable and poor, we should use a poverty line which is double of this. If we use a poverty line which is double of this, then what we get is this green line. So if you look at the left figure, it gives the proportion of people who are poor using a poverty line which is double of this, which is much more realistic than using such a low poverty line. If you look at that, you see that the proportion of people who can be considered poor has merely declined from about 81% to 77%. But if you look at the number of poor, it has actually increased from about 811 million in 93 to about 836 million in 2004. So this is precisely the period when India has been having this high growth. Now this stops at 2004. Let me show you figures for 2009. In 2009, if we use the same procedure that Arjun Sengupta used, the number of poor will be 903 million. But in India, there is a huge debate. So I have just plotted the various measures of the number of poor people using various measures of the poverty line. So this is the current official poverty line. Then there was a committee formed to look at whether the poverty line is meaningful. They came up with a poverty line which is a little lower, so you have a higher number of people. And then if you use the Arjun Sengupta committee poverty line, you have 903 million. So the bottom line is, during this period where India has been having this high growth, the number of people who are poor and economically vulnerable in any meaningful sense, using a meaningful poverty line, has not gone down. Now that is just the income measure of poverty. Let me show you one non-income measure, which is a measure of child undernutrition, which is the percentage of children who have low weight for age. So India falls here, where in 2000, so during this period, the average for India was about 47%. So 47% of children have undernutrition, and that is worse than several sub-Saharan African countries. This was again the period when India was having this huge...
And Afghanistan.
Yes, yes, and war-ravaged Afghanistan. And this is again the period when you are having this high growth. So though that is what the main aspect of the growth process, on top of that, there are these two aspects. One is the increasing inequality. So there are several measures which show that inequality has been increasing. One way to understand that is to see that India is the country which is having one of the highest growth rates of billionaires. And you see that 903 million people are below a poverty line, which is what, about 1,000 rupees per month per person. So that is one way to think about inequality. There are much more robust methods to do that. The other important aspect of the current growth regime is this huge movement of the state to evict people from their access to common property resources. So in terms of forest resources, water resources, all resources which are outside the ambit of the market and which the poor use to supplement their meager income from the market is now under attack by the state. Now, let me show you a very striking graph, which I think foregrounds the movement that is taking place in India today. So this is graph which is taken from the National Sample Survey, and this gives the monthly per capita expenditure in rural areas in various states. So look at the pink states. So these are the states: Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, Odisha, Bihar, and Jharkhand. These are the states where the monthly per capita expenditure in rural areas was below 450 rupees per month, that is monthly per capita expenditure. This whole region, or a large part of this region, is a forested region. A large part of that forested region is the region where there are huge amount of natural resources. So bauxite, iron ore, and lots of other resources lie here. This region is also the region which has the strongest Maoist movement. So this graph or this map I have taken from a website called South Asia Terrorism Portal. So that is a website of Institute of Conflict Management, which has been formed by an ex-COF. And they track what they consider terrorism. And what is very striking is that this area where you have huge poverty, huge amount of natural resources, is also the area where the Maoist movement has grown. So it is not a coincidence that the current growth regime, which is based on excluding and dispossessing people, and which is not improving the lives of the working people, is also the region where the resistance movement has become strongest. And there is a wide spectrum of resistance movements. The Maoist movement is only one of them. There are movements which use the current legal framework, but this is probably the staunchest opposition or the staunchest resistance to the entry of capital and the move to dispossess people. So that is the way, that is one of the ways in which we can understand this Maoist movement. So I had some comments about the Maoist movement, but I will stop here because
if you want to take like 2 more minutes.
Maybe we can come back to that when we have
Q&As.
So I will stop here.
Thank you.